Of the living entities,
I am this.
Samsmrite
of the continuation of material existence.
Hetu,
the cause.
Asantosha,
dissatisfaction with his destined achievement.
Artakamayo,
the sake of lusty desires,
and getting more and more money.
Yadrichaya,
with the gift of destiny.
Upapanena,
which has been achieved.
Santosha,
satisfaction.
Muktaye,
for liberation.
Smritaha
is considered fit.
Translation and purport.
Oh, just translations. I'll read all the translations. Material existence causes discontent in regard to fulfilling one's lusty desires and achieving more and more money. This is the cause for the continuation of material life, which is full of repeated birth and death. But one who is satisfied by that which is obtained by destiny is fit for liberation from this material existence. A Brahmin who is satisfied with whatever is providentially obtained is increasingly enlightened with spiritual power. But the spiritual potency of a dissatisfied brahmana decreases as fire diminishes in potency when water is sprinkled upon it. Therefore, O King, from you, the best of those who give charity, I ask only 3 paces of land. By such a gift, I shall be very pleased. The way of happiness is to be fully satisfied to receive that which is absolutely needed. Shukadeva Goswami continued, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead had thus spoken to Bali Maharaj, Bali smiled and told him, "All right, take whatever you like." To confirm his promise to give Vamanadeva his desired land, he then took up his water pot. Understanding Lord Vishnu's purpose, Srukracharya, the best of the learned, immediately spoke as follows to his disciple, who was about to offer everything to Lord Vamanadeva. Sukracharya said, "O son of Virochana, this brahmachari in the form of a dwarf is directly the imperishable Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Accepting Kashyapa Muni as his father and Aditi as his mother, he has now appeared in order to fulfill the interests of the demigods. You do not know what a dangerous position you have accepted by promising to give him land. I do not think that this promise is good for you. It will bring great harm to the demons. This person falsely appearing as a brahmachari is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who has come in this form to take away all your land, wealth, beauty, power, fame, and education. And after taking everything from you, he will deliver it to Indra, your enemy." Prabhupada's purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in this regard that the very word Hari means one who takes away. If one connects himself with Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord, takes away all his miseries. And in the beginning, the Lord also superficially appears to take away all his material possessions, reputation, education, and beauty. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.8, Yasyaham anugranami harishe tadanam shanai. The Lord said to Maharaj Yudhisthira, "The first installment of my mercy toward a devotee is that I take away all his possessions, especially his material opulence, his money. This is
this is a special favor of the Lord toward a sincere devotee. If a sincere devotee wants Krishna above everything, but at the same time is attached to material possessions which hinder his advancement in Krishna consciousness, by tactics the Lord takes away all his possessions. Here Shukadeva Sukracharya says that this dwarf brahmachari would take away everything. Thus he indicates that the Lord will take away all one's material possessions and also one's mind. If one delivers his mind to the lotus feet of Krishna, Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindayo, one can naturally sacrifice everything to satisfy him. Although Bali Maharaj was a devotee, he was attached to material possessions, and therefore the Lord, being very kind to him, showed him special favor by appearing as Lord Vamanadeva to take away all his material possessions and his mind as well. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Purusthaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namane Namaste Saraswatam Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskyatya De Siddharane. So, Bali Maharaj was practically the ruler of the whole universe, but at the same time he was a great devotee of Krishna. There are 12 different Mahajans, and Balir Vyasakira Vayam, Bali Maharaj, is one of the great Mahajans, and he's teaching us the process of complete surrender. That generally speaking, in the material world, people take material possessions or the accumulation of wealth as something very favorable because their goal is generally sense gratification. It is difficult to enjoy sense gratification without some kind of material prosperity. But for a devotee, material life is not very favorable. Just like when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was performing Kirtan at Shiva's Anga, only very few persons were admitted the first year. And therefore, one day when Lord Chaitanya was by the bank of the Ganges, one Brahmin appeared and said, "You rascal, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You would not permit me to enter into the kirtan, therefore I curse you." And he broke his Brahmin thread and said, "I curse you, you'll have no material happiness." So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to dance in ecstasy. "Thank you very much." Yani sha sarabhutanam yasyam jagrati samyami tasyam jagrami bhutani sani sha pashuto mune. What is night for all sentient beings is a time awakening for the self-control. And what is night for the self-control is a time awakening for all sentient beings. In other words, material progress, which is taken as the goal of life for the materialist, is taken as an impediment towards spiritual advancement for the spiritualist. Similarly, the materialist thinks that the so-called, or that the spiritual advancement of the spiritualist is only imaginary, and that real life is material advancement. But Queen Kunti says that, "My dear Lord, we've been put into so many difficulties. Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshanat. That we've been poisoned, or at least Bhima was said poisoned, not very nice. Duryodhana was always trying to figure out some way of killing Bhima, because Bhima was playful, but Duryodhana knew that Bhima was so strong that he'd certainly be an impediment towards his political ambitions of killing the Pandavas and ruling the kingdom. Therefore, he was always trying to kill Bhima. Because Bhima would also agitate Duryodhana, because sometimes when they were younger, all the Kurus, Dhritarashtra's, or 100 sons, they would sometimes climb into a tree. And Bhima at a playfulness would shake the tree due to his great strength, and all the sons of Dhritarashtra would fall out of the tree and break their hands and legs. In this way, he wasn't very endearing himself to the Kurus. So one day they invited Bhima for lunch, and they decided to feed him a cake made of Kalakuta poison, special cake. His last birthday cake, they thought. Happy death cake to you. And they fed him the poison. He said, well, maybe we should share it. They said, no, that's all right. You look hungry. You can take the whole thing. We'll eat later. So he ate the whole poison cake, and he felt a little sleepy. And he started to yawn, and they said, it looks like you're a little sleepy. Maybe it's time for rest. And Bhima lay down for rest, and they took his sleeping body and threw it into a lake which they had filled with poisonous cobras and all kinds of poisonous snakes. They immediately began to bite Bhima, but the poison from the snakes counteracted the poison from the Kalakuta poison cake, and Bhima woke up and killed the snakes. And then he was taken by the servants of Varuna, and he was given nectar, by which he became more and more powerful. Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshanat. There was a great fire, as you know. They were put into a house of lack, and it was burnt down. They escaped into the forest, only to be received into the arms of another Rakshasa who tried to eat them. But Bhima also killed that person. Asad Sabaya. And then there was a vicious assembly where Draupadi was trying to be disrobed and all their belongings were taken away. And then there was a big battle where the generals tried to throw all kinds of weapons at the Pandavas, kill them all, kill the sleeping sons of Draupadi. So many problems. So did Queen Kunti complain, we've become your devotees, everything was all right, we were living peacefully. But then suddenly, because we became your devotees, that's where all the problems started. We thought you were going to help us solve our problems. We took shelter of you. But taking shelter of you means that we just got kicked more and more. So what was the value of taking shelter of you? I could have taken shelter of anyone and gotten kicked. No, she didn't complain at all. She said, Vipadak shantu tat shasvat tatra tatra jagat guru. Bhavata darshanam nyasyat apuna bhavadarshana. That we wish that we can see these calamities again and again. Because when we see these calamities, naturally we remember you. And therefore, by remembering you, we will forget about birth and death. Of course, Kali Yuga is so auspicious in one sense that we don't have to pray for calamities. Kali Yuga means our whole life is a calamity. Therefore, we have every opportunity all the time to pray to Krishna. And what was she praying? Janmaishwarya Shuta Shivira Edamanak Madak Puman Naivahat Yavudatu Mavai Tvam Akinshana Gochara. This Janma, because nowadays no one takes birth in an aristocratic family. Practically speaking, I don't think too many people in Australia will claim to have taken birth in an aristocratic family. But nowadays, Janma means I've taken birth in Australia or America or some European country, that I'm born in an economically developed country, that we have everything here. We have television and radio and video and cars and movies. This is aristocratic, according to present conception. And Aishwarya, we have money. Money, money sweeter than honey. The thief, professional soldier, the merchant, and they'll risk their very lives just to get some money. And Shuta Shri Beer, beauty, personal beauty, that somehow or another If I can make myself look attractive, then that's very good. Said in America that before facing the world, the ladies, they put on 14 different types of preparations. And the men, 7 on an average. Before they can face the world and everyone look and say, oh, very nice. Edamana, Shuta, Shivya, and so-called learning, Shuta. That if I can go to school and talk all kinds of nonsense after graduating, then I'm considered very learned. If I say something that no one can understand, then people think, oh, he's very advanced, he's learned so much, no one can understand him now. He's saying things so profound. As Prabhupada said, one person was giving a lecture for 3 hours on the void, talking about nothing for 3 hours. Or as I saw in one bookstore when we were doing a program, an alternative bookstore, there was one author, famous esoteric author, and he wrote one, his last final book was, you open it up and there's nothing but blank pages. The last thing he had to say. His final realization about life. And people are mad after these things. That idam adhyamaya labdva imam prapsye manoratam idam astiyam api me bhavishati punaradhanam asamaya hatakshatra hanishe chaparanapi ishvaraham aham bhogi siraham balavan suki adyo bijanavanasmi konyo sti sadri shomaya dashe yakshe dashami modisha ityagana vimohitaha. So the demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have, and I'll gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine, and I'll have more and more in the future. He is my enemy, and I've killed him. And my other enemies will also be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am perfect. I am powerful, and I am happy. I am surrounded by rich and aristocratic relatives. I will perform some sacrifice. I will go to the heavenly planets, and there I'll kiss the apsaras, and this way rejoice. In this way, the demoniac are bewildered by ignorance. So this is material life, that I'll get more and more material things, and I'll enjoy. And anyone who stands in my way, I'll eliminate them. But this is all based upon simply a combination of earth, water, fire, air, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Anyone who thinks that if they're walking on the street and they find a bag full of air and water and fire and ether, that they've made a great find. They think, let me take it home and worship it. It's just a bag full of different types of ingredients. But only because the soul is in the body does it appear to be somewhat attractive. But as soon as the soul leaves the body, then it's revealed what it really is. Nothing but earth and water and fire and air and ether. Most sane people, when the soul leaves the body, they don't think that now I can take home this body and really be happy. That before this body, in that body was a soul, there were so many problems, they didn't agree with me, they wouldn't surrender. But now finally the soul is left, and now I have the dead body, and now I can really enjoy. Of course, that's possible in Kali Yuga, people may think like that. But generally most people, so far, don't think like that. But that is the consciousness of material life. Let us collect all kinds of dead things, and enjoy them, and this way rejoice, and imagine that we're the controllers and the enjoyers of the material energy. But Maharaj Rishabhdev says, Nunam pramatta kurute vikarma, hirindriya pritya aplinoti, nisada manye, yata atmano yam, asana vi kleshida ashadeha. That a sane person, he doesn't think like that. He knows Nunam pramata kurute vikarma. This endeavor for material happiness through sense gratification and economic development is without any sense of rules, regulations, any sense of advancement is called vikarma and is due to madness. Because somehow or another we've gotten this material body, which is the cause of all our suffering, and the more we become implicated in this body, then the more we suffer. Therefore, and after leaving this body, then we'll get another body to suffer again and again. It's like some people say, they've been born again. Well, we've all been born again. And we'll continue, if we don't get out, if we don't surrender to Krishna and get out of material existence, we'll be born again and again and again. Therefore, it is said, Paravas tavara bodha jato, yavana jignasita atmatatvam, yavan kriyas tavara idamano avai, karmatmaka yena sharira bandaha. That as long as one is simply endeavoring to advance materially, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is praying, Nadanam Najanam Nasundarim, Kavitam Vaja Girisha Kamaye, Mama Janmani Janmani Shre Bhavatat Bhakti Ahai Tuki Twai. He wasn't praying that now I become a devotee, so now I should have a more and more comfortable life, everything should be very nice for me. He said, I don't want any of these things. I don't want more wealth. I don't want more followers or beauty or whatever. I don't even want to get out of the material world. I simply want to enter into the spiritual platform of consciousness. Naiva dvije pura dratya vaitra nyastva virigayana mahamrita magni chitak sochevi mukachetas indriyarata maya sukaya varam udva tovi muda. Prahlad Maharaj was saying that after all, when Lord Nrisimhadev was offering Prahlad, I'll give you whatever you want. Now I've killed your father. You had no insurance policy on him. Therefore, you're an orphan now. I've simply broken into your house and killed your father and slain him. So therefore, I'll offer you something as a benediction. So Prahlad Maharaj said, no, I don't want any benediction. Because whenever I chant about your glories, my mind merges into an ocean of transcendental happiness, and I forget about all material existence. But at the same time, I'm lamenting to see these rascals, fools and rascals, working hard for happiness, but creating a humbug civilization where people are simply suffering more and more, working hard for nothing. Trying to get more and more money, but suffering to get it, and that's all they get for it. And at the end, they have to suffer more for the sinful reactions of accumulating so much illegal money. Therefore, in the story of Nala Kulvara and Manigriva, who are bathing in the Mandakini River, or the Ganges, the heavenly Ganges, that Narada Muni was passing by and saw them enjoying their material opulence in the form of beautiful heavenly damsels. But they were intoxicated and naked, and so they disrespected Narada Muni, and they were cursed to become trees, as we all know. But it was not unfavorable. It wasn't that Narada Muni was in a bad mood one day and he became envious of Nala Kulvara and Manigriva and said, you rascals, I curse you. I had a fight with Parvati Muni and I got to take it out on someone. No, it was for their benefit. Of course, for materialists, this is the worst thing. He made it to heaven and somehow or another he got cursed to become a tree. What more horrible? Who is this Narada Muni? Better off. No, don't. If he comes by your way, just hide. Who knows what he's going to do to us? These are the sons of Kulvara, demigods. And what to speak of us? No, they were cursed, and they lost all their material opulence, but they also lost their material conception of life, and therefore became eligible to see Krishna. This idea that we have material opulence is all just an illusion. prakate kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudatma kartahamiti manyate. The bewildered soul, under the influence of the three modes of nature, thinks himself to be the doer of activities which are actually carried out by the three modes. In other words, we think we are the body or we own the body, but actually we're simply the passenger in the body, and the owner of the body is right there in the form of the supersoul. And although the supersoul is very kind to us and he is fulfilling our desires according to what we deserve, but at no time are we the doer of the activities, nor do we become the proprietor of anything. We simply get one illusory body after another, imagining ourselves to be the proprietors and the enjoyers and the doers. Therefore, when one has less, or when it says, when you ain't got nothing, you ain't got nothing to lose. When you have nothing, then there's no anxiety that you're going to lose something. When Sanatana Goswami was walking to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Benares, Varanasi, after giving up his ministership in the service of the Nawab Hussein Shah, at that time he was dressed as a Muslim mendicant and he had bribed the jailkeeper with 10,000 gold coins to get out. But his servant, Ishan, had taken 7 gold coins with him, unknowns to Sanatana Goswami. When he arrived at the hotel keeper, he had employed one palmist who read Sanatana Goswami's hand and could understand that he had 7 gold coins with him. He had good palmist back then. And therefore the hotel keeper treated him very nicely with the idea that at night he'd come and kill him and take his 7 gold coins. So Sanatana Goswami, being a very learned person and experienced in governmental dealings and diplomacy, thought that why is this man so nice to me? I'm just a mendicant, I have nothing, apparently. So I must have some wealth that I don't know about. So he asked his servant, Ishan, "What do I do? Did you bring something with you?" So he said, "Yes, 6 gold coins." So he took the gold coins and offered them to the hotel keeper, and the hotel keeper said, "Thank you very much. I was going to kill you for the 7 gold coins." He said, "7? Yes, you must have one more, but you can keep it anyhow, and I'll take you across this hilly tract and bring you to where you want to go." Sanatana Goswami said, No, you keep the 7 gold, the gold coins, because if I keep them, someone else will try and kill me for them." And then he told Ishan to go back with his 1 gold coin, that better off not accompany me. In this way, we can see that if you get some material opulence, it's not, and you get so-called friends, suddenly, as soon as you get wealth and money, so many friends surround you. "Oh, you're such a nice person, so generous, nice to have you as a friend." Suddenly you get all kinds of friends, and even your enemies become your friends, and they take everything away from you. They try to get as much as they can. And when you're left with nothing, then they say, "Oh, we don't really, it was nice having you as a friend, but we're too busy now. We got so many things to do, enjoying your form of wealth." Therefore, these so-called friends in this material world is all based upon the fact that we can give you something, therefore you are our friend. But as soon as we can't give you something, as Prabhupada points out, that as soon as the family members see this person has no more money, no more reputation, no more material opulence, then they abandon him as something useless. And when he is bereft of all his material wealth, his family members, then he has no more attachment, and he can take shelter of Krishna and Krishna consciousness, because that's the only thing left. So sometimes Krishna arranges that. Actually, we don't have anything, but we have a big illusion. And sometimes when Krishna takes away the illusion, a pious person takes shelter of Krishna. And an impious person becomes very aggrieved and starts to lament and sometimes goes crazy. Prabhupada gives the example of the one C.R. Das, that he was earning 50,000 rupees every month as a lawyer in India during the time of the Gandhi movement. But he was miserable because he was always intoxicated, always suffering. So one day he saw one mendicant in the street and told his wife, "I want to be like him." So sure enough, Gandhi one day, he asked him to give up his wealth and join the movement, or actually give up his job. So he said, "No, I'll keep my job and I'll give you whatever I make." But Gandhi insisted that he give up his job, so he wasn't earning 50,000 rupees every month. They were giving him 200 or 300 rupees every month. But he used to give whatever he got, he used to give away, because he was quite generous, practically speaking. So he was poverty-stricken, and within 2 years he died out of depression. So generally speaking, if someone has material opulence and they're not pious, if they give it up, then they become very morose, always remembering what their former opulence and how they were enjoying sense gratification. But it is said in the life of the six Goswamis, Tyaktva Torna Mashesha Mandalapati Shainim Siddhatu Chavan Bhutva Dina Gunesha Ko Karunaya Kopi Nakanta Shito Gopi Bhava Rasamrita Dilahari Kolo Lamogna Moho Pande Rupa Sanatana Raguyago Shri Jiva Gopala Go. The six Goswamis, they're able to give up their aristocratic positions, their ministerial positions that they had in the government of the in Bengal under the Shah, and their great wealth that Raghunath Das had. He gave it up as tuchavat, something insignificant. And they put on loincloths and they lived in Vrindavan, but very blissfully, because they were absorbed in the mood of the gopis, of pure devotional service, and therefore they were on a platform where they were merged into the ocean of transcendental happiness. And they achieved it by the process of regulated devotional service, or at least they demonstrated that. Sankhya Purvaka Namagana Nativi Kolo Lasani Krita Nidra hara vihara kari vidrito chatyantyadino chayo go radha krishna gunasmritira madhurima nandena samohito pande rupa sanatana raguyago shri jiva gopala go. They chanted their rounds every day. They chanted even more than 16. Every day they followed, bowing down to the Vaishnavas, offering dandavats to Govardhan, Radhakund. They followed regulated devotional service, and this way they were able to give up eating and sleeping because they were so much enchanted by the wonderful pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So this is the process that if we become absorbed in Krishna consciousness, by especially hearing and chanting about Krishna, rendering service to Krishna, then we won't be attached to our material possessions, even this very dear and near body that we're in right now. Thinking ourselves this body, thinking our interest is this body. If the body feels good, then I feel good. If the body is not so good, then I'm not so good. If my mind is happy, then I'm happy. If I get what I want, I'm happy. If I lose something, then I'm very unhappy because my mind is unhappy. So this attachment to this ups and downs of material body and mind is simply the ultimate cause of our dissatisfaction and stress. But if we come to the platform of becoming conscious of Krishna under all circumstances, then we won't be bothered by the so-called good and bad reactions we're receiving due to our past activities. So the six Goswamis demonstrated that, and here Bali Maharaj is also demonstrating this. So, thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Can you just explain this a little bit more, the Sukha Soul and the soul and how this and Mrs. Remote, how this all works?
how they work together? Hopefully they work together. Oh, the Krishna, he senses our desire, just like one can understand the flavor of a flower by smelling it. So according to what we desire and according to what we deserve, Krishna tells the material energy to arrange itself in such a way as to fulfill our desires according to what we deserve. So the soul desires, and Krishna makes a decision what to do on the basis of the soul's desire. So God, the soul proposes, and God disposes. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Granthraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Arataya, for increasing one's opulence. Kamaya, for increasing sense gratification. Swajanaya cha, for maintaining one's family members. Panchada, for these different objectives, for these five different objectives. Vibhajan, dividing. Vitam, his accumulated wealth. Iha, in this world. Amudra, the next world. Cha, and Modate, he enjoys. So I'll read the two previous translations. You will certainly be unable to fulfill your promise, and I think because of this inability, your eternal residence will be in hell. Learned scholars do not praise that charity which endangers one's own livelihood. Charity, sacrifice, austerity, and fruitive activities are possible for one who is competent to earn his livelihood properly. They are not possible for one who cannot maintain himself. Therefore, one who is in full knowledge should divide his accumulated wealth in five parts: for religion, for reputation, for opulence, for sense gratification, and for the maintenance of his family members. Such a person is happy in this world and in the next. Purport. The Shastra is enjoined that if one has money, one should divide all that he has accumulated into five divisions. One part for religion, one part for reputation, one part for opulence, one part for sense gratification, and one part to maintain the members of his family. At the present, however, because people are bereft of all knowledge, they spend all their money for the satisfaction of their family. Srila Rupa Goswami taught us by his own example, by using 50% of his accumulated wealth for Krishna, 25% of his own for his own self, and 25% for the members of his family. One's main purpose should be to advance in Krishna consciousness. This will include dharma, artha, and kama. However, because one's family members expect some profit, one should also satisfy them by giving them a portion of one's accumulated wealth. This is a shastric injunction. Dharmaya yashasharataya kamaya swajanaya cha panchada vibhajan vitam ihamutra chamodate. Therefore, one who is in full knowledge should divide his accumulated wealth in five parts: for religion, for reputation, for opulence, for sense gratification, and for the maintenance of his family members. Such a person is happy in this world and in the next. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatya Desatarne. Here, Shukra Acharya is giving us some advice for practical dealings. How to divide up one's wealth. According to the Vedic culture, there are different types of goals of life. As mentioned before, there is dharma, there is artha, there is kama, and there is moksha. And then there is pure devotional service. Vimoksha, vimukti. And here are some of the details, a little of the details, about the more materialistic aspects of life are included. First, there is dharma. Dharma means to understand what the laws of God are and to follow them. That's one's first business. And next here is mentioned yasha, or fame, reputation. Just like in modern society, people try to get artha, because between dharma and artha, here is mentioned yasha. So this is just another subtopic. For instance, in modern society, people claim they know things as they are. And they claim they know how to obtain the necessary ingredients from the material world for sense gratification. So therefore, modern fame is more or less based upon advertisement. False or true, more or less advertisement. They take some of their accumulated wealth that they get from their profit, and then they put it into advertisement. Of course, because it's all based upon a misconception that if you add 1 plus 1 and you get 3 together, then it's a misconception. It's a wrong equation. Because modern society is based on the bodily concept of life, and because they think dharma is just a waste of time, therefore they falsely create a reputation based upon misleading advertisement. That if you drink this alcohol or smoke that cigarette, then you'll get that wonderful boy or girl, and you'll win all kinds of wealth and prosperity, and you'll enjoy life like anything, permanently. So it's all nonsense, speculation, misleading advertisement, but people want to be cheated because they're not educated. So people accept this godless philosophy, the godless reputation that people have. But this is not real reputation. As Ramananda Roy said in his conversation with Lord Chaitanya, that real reputation means that you're a devotee. Or at least, in the material concept of life, you're actually following dharma. And dharma begins with vanashram dharma. Vanashrama acharya vitaha purushena puman vishnu aradite panda nanyam yokto toshi karna. That is, that everyone should understand at least what nature they have and perform the prescribed duties accordingly. that if I have no knowledge and I try to become claim I'm a Brahmin, then I'll just mislead people, especially if they accept me as a Brahmin. If I have no understanding of how to properly guide society in practical matters and I claim I'm an administrator or a Kshatriya, then I'll mislead people. If I claim I'm a producer of wealth, a Vaishya, and I'm actually just I'm not producing anything, I'm just exploiting the natural resources, then I'm not really a Vaishya. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj said, Andaya tandira pagiya manas te pisha tantra uru dami bada. They're blind leaders in modern society, and because their followers are also blind, they're simply creating difficulty. They don't know what is to be done. Praritim jana ritim jana na vidur asara na satyam socham chaparo na satyam vidya na satyam apichacharo na satyam na shocham. Praritim jana ritim jana na vidur asaram. Nasochim napichacharana satyam teshu vidyate. They don't know what is pravritim, what you're supposed to do. They don't know what is nivritim, what is they're not supposed to do. This is called ignorance. The whole society is full of ignorance. Adharmam dharma iti ya manite tamasavritaha sarvatam viparitam cha. Buddhisaparta tamasi. They think what is religion, that is irreligion. And they think what is irreligion to be religion. And therefore they're always striving in the wrong direction. So faith in such a society that it can actually lead us to the goal of life is simply based upon ignorance, blind faith. As I mentioned, as an example, I don't know if you heard the example. I don't know if I was here, but there's one festival called the Mardi Gras in New Orleans every year. You know that? What's that?
In Sydney.
In Sydney. And 2 million people are on the streets performing a marathon of committing sinful activities for 1 week. They try to see how many sinful activities they can fit in into 1 week. Barbecuing animals, illicit sex, intoxication, everything. It's all free and open to enjoy. So one day, some years ago, out of kindness, the devotees went out to do Harinam, to purify the atmosphere. And as soon as they got out, chanting the holy names, immediately the police came with paddy wagons and arrested them all and took them to jail. And they were charged with disturbing the peace. So this is called, they think that religion is actually irreligion. And they think that irreligion, that's the goal of life. That is religion. Therefore, they always strive in the wrong direction. So such persons, there is no cleanliness, there is no truth, there is no proper behavior. In other words, in Kali Yuga, the only thing left is a little bit of truth, but that's rapidly disappearing. There's no austerity, there's no cleanliness, there's no mercy, and hardly there's any truth left. So truth is based upon dharma, dharmic activities. Of course, truth means mercy, cleanliness, austerity, and truthfulness. And the opposite of that is animal slaughter, intoxication, illicit sex, and gambling. And mental speculation. So this is more or less, people have no idea of anything to do with dharma. Therefore, even to support their so-called economic development, which is all based upon illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, then they're willing to sacrifice anything, including the truth. The most obvious things that are right before you, they'll claim, are actually, it looks like it's white, but it's actually black. You just have to think hard about it. And it looks like it's black, but it's actually white. So this is modern society. Most obvious things that people say, well, why are they lying to me? And then the answer comes very quickly, because you make more money when you lie. It's good for the economy. It's good for your sense gratification. Just accept it. Therefore, as people become more absorbed in these sinful activities, the more they become covered, the more they'll accept any lie as the truth, just so they can further their sense gratification and so-called their actual exploitation of the material energy. Therefore, Krishna says, Shayam svadamo viguna paradharma sunistita sve dharme nididam shayak paradharmo bhayavaha. That it's better to perform one's own duty, even imperfectly, than to perform someone else's duty. That failure in one's own duty is better, because to follow someone else's duty is dangerous. It's dangerous because one will simply increase by imitation. One will not make any progress oneself, and one will simply increase one's lust, anger, and greed by such imitation. That's the only benefit that one will get. Unfortunately, people don't know that. Therefore, they're trying to make a civilization based upon exploitation. The only problem is that after a while, you run out of things to exploit. They can go on for some time, but then after a while, the whole thing will collapse. Just like now, for oil, they're willing to say any lie and, of course, I mean, do anything, just the so-called oil. But then the time will come, there won't be any water left, pure water. We can see that. And when I grew up, you could actually turn on the tap anywhere and the water would come out. But now, most places, you turn on the tap, you don't know what's going to come out. You don't know, even if so-called water comes out, you don't really know what's in it, if it's actually water, or if you have to light a match sometimes to see if it burns in it. There's so many chemicals in it. So the time will come, there won't be any water, or you'll have to pay some money just to get water. Or if you go to Tokyo or places like that, in the street they sell oxygen, because people can't breathe the air. You have to buy air. So, sense gratification, the future will be, if you have enough air to breathe, you consider your life pretty much successful. Working hard all day long, just to pay the money for the air bill. And then if you can put a little extra water in it, well, that's really a feast. And if the food is not was not artificially made in a factory, you're considered to, that's really quite fortunate. That's for the rich people. They actually get a real carrot rather than one that was manufactured in a factory out of chemicals. So that time is coming. By exploiting the material resources, gradually the material resources, Mother Nature, will stop producing. Just like in the case of Pritha Maharaj, Bhumi stopped producing because the whole society was full of demons. Anad bhavati bhutani parjana anasambhava jagnad bhavati parjanyo jagna karma samudbhava. That all living entities are subsisting on food grains, which are based upon rain. It is not that food, although we may not see the means of production or the relationship between what we're eating and the means of production, it is all based upon rain. If we want any kind of food, it depends on rain. And rain comes from sacrifice. And sacrifice is born at a person's prescribed duties. In other words, in the Vana and Ashram system, the Shudras cooperated with the others. The Vaishyas would produce the things that were necessary for maintaining the body and also for performance of sacrifice, jaga. Because the demigods have to be, and ultimately Vishnu has to be satisfied by the performance of jaga. So that some of the grains, a proportion of the grains of the ghee that was produced, especially some of the wealth that was produced, was offered to the king, who would arrange for the Brahmins to perform sacrifices to Vishnu and the demigods so that the whole material nature would be arranged properly. That the air would be provided properly, the sunlight would be provided properly, everything would be provided. Therefore, the Vaishyas were not greedy, because they knew that if they sacrifice went on nicely, then everything would be provided amply, more than necessary, and everyone would live peacefully. That there was a understanding of how things work. Nowadays, people have no idea. They think they just go to the weatherman. They think everything, the clouds are just moving accidentally. They think that today it's raining just accidentally. Today it's sunny accidentally. Today there's a hurricane. Today there's a drought. Today there's a famine. It's all accidental. They think like that because they're godless. They have no idea. They think they can do anything. Somehow or another, if they can get money, then everything's all right. They can buy whatever they need. But the time will come, as Prabhupada said. Now, Prabhupada was saying that rice is selling at, for a kilo, 3 rupees. But he said the time will come that if you have 300,000 rupees, you won't be able to get rice. It won't be available. So of course we're thinking, well, that no problem, because I won't be around anyhow. Because I'm going to leave my body and go to Never Never Land and everything will be all right. But don't be so sure. It may be that we may be in our next lifetime in this class also. And rice may be, 150,000 rupees. And someone may be sitting up here, the time will come, it's 300,000 rupees. And we're thinking, no worries, I won't be around. But unless we become a little concerned about the practical situation that we're under, at least that much should be concerning to us. You know, going back to some spiritual world where we don't really know what it's like. You know, it's kind of like sounds quite nice, but who knows what if it's real or when am I going to get there. But we may be in this material world for a while, so we might as well try to understand what's necessary to live here properly. And one of the most important things is that the demigods should be satisfied, Lord Vishnu should be satisfied, and of course our process is Sankirtan Jaga, chanting the holy names. The only thing is, we can see practically that even amongst the devotees, they stop often to perform, they cease performing the Sankirtan Jaga because they become overly concerned with their economic development. And the more they become overly concerned with their economic development, then they stop hearing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and performing the activities of devotional service, such as chanting the holy names. And because they get no higher taste, therefore they start engaging more and more in activities of sense gratification. They think, if I just get this little bigger house, if I just get a little better car, if I just put a little bit more money in the bank, and we watch at first only ITV's programs, and then there's some other educational programs in television we should watch, and then we need a little entertainment to satisfy our minds, and then, it's all kind of, one becomes more and more bewildered by the illusory energy, and finally anything is all right. Because after all, we're devotees. Once in a while, every year or so, we go and see the deities for Jamasmi. Therefore, everything's all right. Now, one should understand that the sacrifice or the practical things, Sankirtan Jaga, also has to have a background of practical activities. That we have to live life in such a way as it supports the Sankirtan Jaga. And part of that is, we should, as Prabhupada has created, different things like Gurukul and the farm communities, and many other things. He wasn't thinking, well, maybe the devotees can have a few hobbies, like raising cows, and maybe, you know, once in a while some fanatic devotees can educate their children in Krishna consciousness, rather than more practical things, like how to become a bona fide, fully qualified demon. And then if they grow up, they'll have choices whether they really want to continue on their with their career as a demon or they want to try to become a devotee. So we may think like that, that Prabhupada was just, you know, he had some alternative things that he was experimenting with. Prabhupada wasn't experimenting with anything. He was actually simply presenting reality, unfortunately, because he had to deal with people who were experimenting since the beginning of their lives with all kinds of other chemicals, which more or less took away most of their brain. So therefore, for them, everything was an experiment. And if they didn't get high immediately from it, they immediately gave it up. So, it is not an experiment, it is a reality that there are different aspects to culture, and culture is not some dharmatic religious philosophy meant for a few crazy people who just want to rebel from their normal society, and therefore whatever is the most unusual they accept and take up for some time until something more unusual comes along, and then they take up that. Now this is a scientific philosophy that things like, as mentioned here, how to utilize our energy, first of all, for religion. Religion means beginning with vana and ashram, or ultimately religion is sarva dharma parijaja mamekam sharanam vraja. Ultimately religion is to understand how everyone and everything is related to Krishna in all its different aspects. But that will not be achieved unless we transcend the modes of nature. So as long as we're in the modes of nature, as long as we're interested in sense gratification, as long as we're interested in the means to acquire the means for sense gratification, as long as it takes some brains to organize the means for sense gratification, and as long as we're not fully clear what the real objective in life and how to achieve it is, then we have to follow some certain principles of practical behavior in the material world. Sometimes the devotees falsely think they become liberated, and therefore they're free to do anything. But that's not always true. There may be some aspect of liberation. We're liberated partially from some of our misconceptions. So that is liberation, but that's not full liberation. That's simply we've seen something about what reality is, and we're trying to see more about it. So in that sense, that's a type of partial liberation. But if we become fanatic and we think that I'm fully liberated, I can do anything in the material world, and I have my backup. We have the super soul. He'll back me up, whatever I do. Doesn't matter whether he wants me to do it or not. I'm just going to do it. And if there is any problem, he'll solve it. To give a vivid example, just like there are some so-called devotees who are selling large amounts of drugs in America. Principally, I guess they were selling heroin. So they thought if we give a significant amount of our profit to the movement, then Krishna is going to be part of the gang. And since he's part of the gang, he's part of the, you know, he's part of our crew, certainly he'll protect us because he doesn't want to get caught either. After all, he was a professional thief in his childhood. So he understands what it's like getting caught. But lo and behold, they got caught. To their surprise, that somehow, and they try to implicate Krishna. You rascal! You're supposed to be God, but you turned us in to the authorities. So we're going to get you involved too. They tried hard. They weren't completely successful, but they were partially successful. Of course, Krishna didn't have to go to jail. They weren't even looking for him. They were.
Most of the authorities didn't even believe he existed. He was just...
So similarly, to think that we can do whatever we want and somehow or another Krishna will take the responsibility for it. This is the Christian philosophy, that Jesus Christ, he died for our sins, and that we can go and do any sinful activity and we just take out our Jesus Christ credit card and charge all the sins to him. But this is not how things actually work. Similarly, we have to find out what the responsibility is, not only in the Vana and Ashram system, but even as a devotee. The devotees also have responsibilities. But that's a more subtle responsibility, that to actually be a devotee, we have to be in touch with the super soul. Then he can tell us what he wants us to do. And if we're not in touch with the super soul, then we have to rely upon the Shastra to tell us what we're supposed to do. And if we're not so much in touch with it, we can't understand the Shastra so clearly, then we should, before we do anything, we should humbly investigate. And then when we're actually clear what we're supposed to do, then we should do it. Not that I'm a devotee, I have my devotional shield, whatever I do, I'll be protected. And that doesn't work. We have to find out what, somehow or another, through gurus, sadhu, and shastra, what Krishna wants us to do. And then when it's clear, if we do that, then it becomes dharmic. And then if we do dharmic activities, then our actual reputation will increase. Then the means of economic development, of livelihood, will be steady and stable. Otherwise, when the whole society collapses, you know, we may collapse with it also, if we're not actually rooted in Dharma and economic development based upon Dharma. Then we may be out there looking for the roots of trees to eat them too with the rest of the people. That will be our sense gratification. Find the freshest roots, we'll be fighting over them. Because that time is coming when people are going to be eating roots and whatever else, flesh, mostly flesh. But if we're rooted in real dharmic activities, then our reputation will spread and our real means of economic development will be there. And at the same time, the actual sense gratification that's necessary to make progress in this world and into the next will be there also. The proper way of regulating sense gratification. When they say kama, it doesn't mean unrestricted, unlimited sense gratification. It means the right sense gratification, that one is satisfied and that one can think about vimukti or liberation into the spiritual realm of consciousness. If one is dissatisfied in family life, as we can see with even within the society of devotees, it's not that because we're devotees. It says, Prabhupada writes in the fourth canto, or third canto, that because they're devotees, therefore married life is always happy. So therefore we have to conclude, because in many cases married life was not so happy, either Prabhupada was wrong or they weren't really devotees, or their marriage life wasn't based on devotion. That married life based upon devotion may be very happy and blissful. It's actually following the rules and regulations. But if it's not, then we think that married life is meant for sense gratification. That let me enjoy my senses, let me... Dhamma, dhammas, tajagnas, cha. They think dhamma means that if religiously I'm going to enjoy my wife and all the other things. That's my religious principle. And dhamma... Dhammas, I'm going to give all the charity to my relatives, as it mentions here. Charity begins at home, they said. So we're going to get a bigger, I'm going to give everything to my home. And jagga, jagga means sacrifice, I go to work, make money, give all the charity to myself, my wife, and the children, and we enjoy our senses to the fullest. They think that this is the duty of the household. But this is not what happens, is that after you enjoy each other's senses for some time, then you get tired. You live, they think, well, I'm already, after you take the bubble gum and keep on chewing it, after a while, all the sugar goes out. And then you think, well, I'm just chewing. What do you do with bubble gum that you keep on chewing? You just spit it out. Then you go on looking for another piece of bubble gum. If that's the goal in life, is to enjoy the senses, then you enjoy the senses after a while, you'll use up all the sweetness, you'll have to look for another piece of bubble gum. And then you chew that for some while and spit it out. So that's, people have taken that as normal. You get married forever and ever, which is more or less 3 or 4 years. And after a while, you spit each other out. And you try to figure out how you divide up the kids, or you send them somewhere out in the street to get an education. And look around for bubble gum. That's the whole purpose of life, looking for bubble gum that has some extra sweetness in it. So then, one will never be satisfied. One will never learn that the goal of life is not to get bubble gum and chew it until the sweetness gets out and keep on spitting it out. Because then the whole street becomes filled with bubble gum. And you step on it, it's quite messy. So the idea of household life, regulated sense enjoyment, is to learn that by cultivating Krishna consciousness, by fixing one's mind upon Krishna, then this sense gratification is actually insignificant. Then the amount of work you have to do dutifully, religiously, and the amount of sense gratification you actually get back from it is so insignificant, you might as well give it up. But if you don't understand that, you think that, yes, I'll give it up. But then you'll give it up and you'll start another family somewhere else if you don't cultivate the higher taste. Prabhupada says so many people renounce life, their family life. They get older, they renounce their wife and children, they go to Vrindavan, and they start another family there. Because they never really get the higher taste. That comes from dutifully executing even household life and properly utilizing one's wealth, dividing it properly, utilizing it properly, so that sense gratification is properly experienced so that one can understand the value of liberation, of actually becoming fully Krishna conscious. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
I've got to find authorized versions of Manashandam and Manasamita are very rare in Krishna consciousness. And Krishna Devadasa is writing a book on Manashandam, but I've not been able to find Manasamita.
Oh, don't worry about it. If you read it, it's not so easy to understand. Everything is there, and the essential things are there in Prabhupada's books. If you read Prabhupada's books, these things will all become clearer. It's not like Vanashram Dharma was missed in Prabhupada's books and the Manasamhita. Everything is there, but in the perspective of Krishna consciousness. If you read Manusamhita or other books like that, you may miss the aspect of Krishna consciousness, the perspective. Therefore it says, Dharma Kriyojita Kaitavotra Paramonir Matsaran Satam. Here Dharma is given, but not the materialistic Dharma, but the Dharma from the point of view of Krishna consciousness. Anything else? Yes.
You spoke of various forms of liberation. Would you explain what full liberation is, please?
Oh, when we see Krishna face to face and we enter into the spiritual world, start, you know, sewing garlands for Krishna or playing with him or whatever. That's fully liberation. You never come back to the material world again. Or at least not to material consciousness. We may be here, but if we see everything eternally in relation to Krishna and are fully engaged in Krishna's service 24 hours a day in full love and devotion, that's complete liberation. Liberation from all false material conceptions of life. Anything else? Yes.
can probably talk as loud as you can and everyone would hear you. Is that all right? Quite honest, yes, a little bit, but not very successfully. Because it has to be based, well, principally we're interested in preaching. That's the mission. But what are we going to preach about to people? Join the Hare Krishna movement and shave your head and become, you know, go back to the spiritual world or put on a sari and your life is perfect. Oh, those people are interested in their means of economic development. That's what their real interest is. And they know they have to enjoy some kind of sense gratification. They're not just making money to look at it. They have to want to spend it on something. So this is, we don't have any example. If we just show people, you know, we're going to build one big temple and everyone can live in it, it's probably not going to work. People won't be very much interested, most people. But if we can show them how they can dharmically, religiously live, because otherwise what most people, just like we have devotees, they have to work for all kinds of companies here, because that's all that's available. Otherwise they'd starve, they wouldn't make any money, they'd just be chanting Hare Krishna until they left their body. But most of us are not prepared to do that. So the alternative is to actually have a place where people could actually raise their family with little or no cost and get all the means of gratifying their senses and having the time available so they can chant Hare Krishna and hear about Krishna. So since the major thing that people are working for is food, although people don't realize that, but the major thing that they're working for is food and just a little shelter over their head so they can keep warm while they're eating and sleeping. And enough shelters to put the little kids in there too. Not so it's not too crowded, you don't have to hear the screaming all the time. So, I mean, that's basically, a farm is like that. There's a lot of land, and you can put a few seeds in the ground, something sprouts up, hopefully, and you can eat it. And there's probably a few trees, you can build some little shelter and burn a little wood and keep warm. And then your economic problem is solved. And if you can have a cow and drink the milk, then you'll probably get some brains to realize how nice it is. And then you can go on chanting Hare Krishna. So until we have that most basic thing to show people, unless we accept it ourselves, and obviously most of us don't accept it, we think, oh, going out to those horrible farms where there's those nasty cows and that dirt, you know, you gotta walk on dirt, you know, there's no, you know, expensive running the internet out there. And you know, besides that, how am I going to make money for my car, my kid's education? How is he going to become a lawyer or a doctor? And what would my parents think? And, you know, who knows what's going to happen? What would I do? I'd be out there, you know, there'll be fresh air and all these other nice things, but I got my mind, I got so many things I got to do. In the city? Well, you could get little pots and grow little asparagus in your little pot and claim you're a farmer. No, it wouldn't work. Of course, the basis is eating. Vanashram Dharma deals with two things, basically. Well, it deals with four things. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. How to do it properly. So if we don't do the eating properly, we won't be able to sleep properly or mate properly or defend properly either. Anything else? I guess we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.